interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 558. Really trying to interrupt the crickets out there. We really need to watch what's going on. These folks that are working this thing through they're psychopaths. And so careful of what we are looking at in the world. And we look at all the fiscal problems we have. There's just more. We were predicting that there would be wars, the bankers' wars, that keep the bankers in control. And I've been asking people to try and make a different tack for themselves. We were told the founding father era that we were in, not this post-founding father era that's being modernized. But we should go to money, not as money. We shouldn't go to fiat to give ourselves a buffer to start with. Very difficult. It's going to get a lot more difficult if the things I see about the underlying metal, gold, is coming true. And it has been going up. And there's lots of reasons, but what you see in the market's a speculation market, and so don't get lost in that. But with all the bad money going after bad dumped on Ukraine here, we can now find out, if and we didn't know already, no one of sound mind thinks that Ukraine can win, as we're all watching our societies crumble as money goes to war. Up in smoke is going on, and not the type that maybe Grimner would have been interested in. But the one would need to be completely lacking in common sense to believe the Ukraine can win against Russia, ex-Pentagon officer Rebecca Koffler told Fox News. So that's right, folks. No one of sound mind believes so. And I hope you might find sound minds on various platforms syndicating these broadcasts and adding video onto the audio of the content that I'm speaking about. Shows these links and things. He has a list of links at his on the platforms he's distributing to, and many of them. If you stop in, maybe leave a comment, tell him I sent you. I can just let you know he dedicates a lot of time to this broadcast, been doing it for years. And he puts all this stuff again on video. You get to see, read some things if you're not interested more to do anymore at that point. Just want to sit there and listen to what I'm saying. There's going to be a link I put in periodically now that he's put together. It's a link, tr.ee, at sound_mind. So you can find a whole bunch of links for different people. A lot of people have different capacities. And you'll find even, I think, a low bandwidth offering from Gray Dude that's offered there. You'll find some of that. If you have X on my posts, I will give you that link there, too. I do that right at the beginning of the broadcast. So you can go if you want to watch video over there. And again, lots of syndicators coming on. I may have been contacted by a few of the listeners that actually regained a couple of their YouTubes. Very interesting what's going on. I won't touch those right quite yet. I want to get a little more information. But I can just let you know they are extricating everything that those folks did for this broadcast and publishing it on their YouTube. It's Behind the Woodshed is being removed from the internet, apparently, pretty wholesale. And nobody else on their platform. So it's going to be important that we get the word out. So I'd say thank you to them, and hopefully you step in and thank them as well. Thanks to my listeners as well to checking those out for us, and leave a thumbs up. I guess I have to ask that because not many people do. A few of you do, I think. I do appreciate that. Those of you that want to do a thumbs down, if they're allowing, give me a comment as to why you don't like what I'm saying or you don't believe it. I'm totally open to being corrected if that's possible. I don't come here to just wax eloquent. I try to show you that there's reality in the world, and we need to stay with that, and there's the best practices on how we address all that. Some people may not agree with it. Some people may not appreciate my minimal dry humor I try to throw in every once in a while. And so I get the thumbs down for some reason, but I don't know why. And it's really interesting for me. I need to know, like anything, like all my life, when something didn't seem to work right, I need to know why. And I hope everyone's like that. Go by their platforms, and if you will, give a thumbs up in support of their dedication to this broadcast as we're attempting to get the word out. That's all on their volition. I'm not, people are just reposting this broadcast, so I really appreciate all that. You know, we have a small footprint and not a lot of carpet in it either. Interesting. But we move on here. Thank you very much, and no sound mind would agree to it, to the Ukraine war, or spending money toward it. But watch what your government in the United States is doing. Watch what governments all over in the West, they call it, is doing. And yet, where are the sound minds? Well, there's a couple platforms now, and maybe you go there instead of going out in the world and finding out it's a bunch of insanity. As we continue to hear, the Zionists here thought that they would win in Gaza. We move these wars along. These are very important. To me, they're very important for people to understand. We're being told a whole lot of information, international law, what's going on, or the lack of it, and it reflects directly on us. If no one's yet noticed, some of you have, we can see directly what's going on here in the States, or any of yours, wherever you live, actually, because these international laws are pretty generic and created over time. Nations over time created these things. And so they're really general to lots of places. But here we thought, the Zionists thought they'd win in Gaza, and then we hear that the strategic retreat deception of moving into a new phase, as they'll call it, all these euphemisms always, and denying defeat, i.e. the Palestinians, are tougher than we thought while exposing our evil intent. As we read, new stage of Gaza war, Israel plans partial troop withdrawal, targeted operations. So for as vociferous as they'll be and say they're running their own show, they're really not, and they got some real problems. And I think they're getting hurt pretty bad, and we're not getting that news. And so let's watch. We can watch this, but I don't know. I'm not quite sure that they know what they're doing, because they went, again, like the United States politicized the dollar. They're going to get whacked. This is just going to fall terrible for them, because it's not principle. And these people have apparently no moral in them. There's no morality in them. And they have been shown that in history. The Zionist Federation, what I'm talking about here, there's really nothing we're going to speak to. Our morality, what we would place on this, really has no sense for them. So in a way, we can't even impose or impute or give over this to them. A move marking a new phase in the ongoing conflict with Hamas. Israel has announced plans for a partial withdrawal of its troops from Gaza over the next few months. Reports suggest that some reservists will be returned to civilian life to help the economy. Interesting, isn't it? Again, the United States, just like Ukraine, if it didn't supply all the weaponry, there'd be no battle over there, I don't think. But if it was, it'd be very short-lived. The IDF has yet to achieve its primary objective in the conflict, capturing Hamas leader Yahya Sinwar. Both Sinwar and his younger brother, Mohammed, who commands the southern Hamas forces, have managed to elude Israeli forces throughout the duration of the conflict. So the Palestinians aren't eluding, though, if we look at the words. They are avoiding. Eluding connotes an unlawfulness. Avoiding is one's right to not associate. So the Palestinians have a right to resist a belligerent occupier, and the corollary right to continue to avoid capture, to continue their resistance. So when you look at these words, they're priming us. If we don't understand a better language, they prime us for a prejudice. They use the word evade. They're not evade. In any regard here, the Zionist Federation bombs and tanks weren't enough to dislodge the lawful inhabitants, is what I took away from this. Interestingly, the report goes on to mention the supporting actor to a lawless, belligerent occupation and genocide, the land theft and the government overthrow, where we read, simultaneously, the United States military has actively worked to prevent the Israeli conflict from escalating into a broader regional confrontation. I read that to say they're looking for a broader regional confrontation, as we hear Lindsey Graham, that warmonger, claiming he wants to bomb Iran out of existence in their oil fields. So they're looking for a bigger, they're pitching for a fight here. Why? Well, they have a bad economy. The Bidenomics and wars. He didn't do anything. They just tried to do a political thing that failed immediately because the economy is so bad. As we were told, Jerome Powell says they don't know what they're doing. It's all magic ball to them. That's all you get to know and need to know. We need to run from that. But they're going to need a war. They need to get people's attention on it. So the United States pops up professing that they don't want a wider conflict, but they also don't stop genocide, will not accept a ceasefire. No different than they put the peace draft between Ukraine and Russia into the dustbin of history as received by Russia and Putin. That's gone. You're going to watch all this is going to now go the way Russia needs it. And there is not going to be much of a capitulation from what I can tell. And there doesn't need to be, actually, as we watch Ukraine just fail. Bad money after bad. So what has the U.S. government actually done here? I just gave the list above here as we're talking through, just as happened as we created in the post-founding father era, maybe serious lessons to be learned in reflection of the international mirror that we look at. Again, as I've been talking to you about all this, it keeps coming up as a nice analogy. As we see in the States that the Civil War drums begin to beat louder in our country, and as the United States occupiers, the United States government as an occupier foments division in the occupied land, known as America here, and to avoid such an embarrassment as the Zionists are want to be. The United States has more understanding perception management than it appears that the Zionist Federation operatives are about. So America is involved in furthering a genocide at warp speed. We can look at our own history here now, agitating from that into civil war through cognitive warfare as it claims to want to avoid it, just like we're watching the statement coming out of the Red Sea and all that other stuff. The genocide, they want to avoid things, but they don't. That's telegraphing they want to get involved. So we're looking now for our people, our sons and daughters, need to be kept home is really a question for me. Is it better that we keep our sons and daughters home now? And are we having these enlisting problems? Maybe good thing. But do we need to keep our sons and daughters home instead of enlisting and being shipped abroad on a foreign, even unlawful cause? Started to come to my mind. They're moving our sons and daughters of fighting age over and away while the United States government is fomenting division for a so-called civil war or beating the drum or setting our minds up that it needs to happen. And, you know, people may just want to follow through with that. Why they're doing it, but this might be a reason for not enlisting into the military right now, due to the deeply held belief of the people in their own nation, and that its security is at risk because of all these international fomentations of war created in order to destroy the United States itself. And this is being done partly because of this clueless, divided population of disenfranchised slaves brought on by this advertised, they tell us that they're advertising that they do cognitive warfare against us as people by the very same military that's trying to get the sons and daughters away from the nation. They won't be here if we go into that to protect us, or they'll have a different allegiance potentially. And the people just may not be intelligent enough to avoid what we were told during the Civil War, the internecine war that Lincoln made comment to. This is the war amongst us, or the perpetual threat that's going to go on. So everyone's put in the sense of fear. And my thought, again, these wars are going to get our sons and daughters to go off to war. They're the young, fit people to go fight and die. And I'm just wondering, together with the Civil War, whether or not that's another part of the plan. As I've been thinking a little bit about that, what's really going on behind all this? And wouldn't it actually be an avoidance, again, not evasion, but an avoidance of a military service that criminally supporting what they call just wars for national security, but that's actually a national security risk where they take they're siphoning off the younger population to go fight these foreign genocides. Your sons and daughters are supporting the genocides as well in order to make and reduce the domestic resistance that might come from the tyranny that they foist at home. And that lawful right of resistance would be, as I've been talking in international law, it's a corollary, would be the right that we have constitutionally first of the right to alter and abolish the government. And the military service would confuse allegiances as well as a tactic on the military side. Those who are running the show, the continuity of government kind of condition, there could be a different type of condition, a different type of occupation working as a military strategy as well. We may not, it just works under the skin, and that's where it wants and needs to work. It needs to not be seen. But so the military service would also confuse allegiance in people and put the fighting age men and women abroad to get rid of them from here. And as a tactic here would be predisposing us to defeat in this nation, which we've already experienced once in our history. So this is not, that is not even a question. But it seems like there may be going on the same tact, but in an advanced form, because of these events, commissions or omissions, and conscription or the draft, is that we could claim as someone avoiding military. And I'm not saying to do this. I'm saying think through this. Think this is maybe something you want to do to support your own nation, not foreign wars in foreign places, but it's a national security a threat. It's against the interest of the people. It's a breach of trust of any official attempting to require a draft to do that relative to someone's assertion that they're avoiding the draft. It used to be like just your religious, well, your convictions and your that were honored, although sometimes people went to jail. There's you need to research all this stuff. But just my thoughts were going on this, using a list of things that I've just kind of mentioned here, an objection for a conscription, which would take your son and daughter. They have to make this decision that that's what they want to do, too. They have to be well understood, read, do their due diligence. I'm not saying to do this and cause trouble. I'm saying that it looks like there may be a real valid reason for people to stay home because our own government is showing by the proofs of what they do in the history of the world right now before us. But they're not constrained by any law. They're not constrained by any moral. They're not constrained by any principle. But they hide underneath something that's national security. And the threat being, if they take away our people to fight and resist them as a tyranny, like the Palestinians do against that tyranny, we're going to be defeated again. I don't see any difference here than Lincoln's war. This is like the doubling down of 9/11, followed by the warp speed attack, the Kobe swindle. You remember, all these military even got injections as well. All the young, all the suffering, so-called, you know, this new died suddenly nonsense and other things that we're not even hearing about. And they're punishing, they're softening up the target. All this happening in the last few years through, and then we hear this beating of the drums of inciting internecine war. No different than we heard in the Civil War. So I'm not going to predict this. I'm saying this is, we're being set up for it. And I'm a little concerned around all that. Do I actually think it, well, I don't know, I guess I can't say I don't think. I think it could happen. I think people are just clueless enough. I look around the world and I don't see people responding. They respond in a way, but it's the way that the controllers, the planners, the cognitive warfare people are actually guiding them along. So I'm not actually sure about this, but I think it's worth some deep thought for people, whether the implementation for you in avoidance of a military conscription or draft is important or could be, and looking in the future and having a basis, again, have a foundation, as I say, the word in your mouth, put something in your, don't just say, oh, because, you have a good reason. And maybe this is just a conversation starter if it sounds valid, and I think it might be. I think we need to think about, again, a lot of Second Amendment people want to talk, but there's a whole thing around actually implementing that, and we have to be a united people, and we have to not be united by some propaganda which would go to war. I mean, this is what governments do. They get their, I told you, Putin had to do that for the Russians. The Russians had to be brought together psychologically to support his actions. Whether it actually was completely right or not, they have to get a population's consent, or you don't have to be really active in it. You just have to not resist it. You have to not talk out about it. That's a technique. That's exactly what they do. So, there's a lot to think about on the dynamic of how this thing would work out if it starts to go there. And if there's a need for the resistance at home, I would hope it would be possibly unavoidable, but we may not. But do our sons and daughters, should they be better prepared to defend us at home while being at home or far away under control of the United States oppressor and used for foreign interests in support of financial, military, industrial complex? Is how I'm seeing this as we look at, again, it's ongoing economics. The economy. It's the economy, stupid. We were told all that. This is what this is about. This is about the fiat system. This is about the global banking system. It's integral with all that we're doing. Now, the consideration here would be more so important given that the United States government has been mostly willing to build this complex at the expense, not defense, of the people. And moreover, since the Civil War, so-called, there's a problem about the Civil War in its name as well. However, the United States government does not represent the interests of the people, but itself. Now, everybody knows that, but how are we going to move through and protect ourselves because we know that and that it does happen? So, and more to the point on that, because the occupying factions inside the government operating under color of lawful government appears to me to be just like the Zionist Federation is doing in Palestine. And this is why I say, look and read the notice for the news for the notice that it is, and you start to make these correlations. Then you have to make the decision of whether or not that's important, that it's right, it's been interpreted correctly, and it's something that you need to at least consider, if not act upon, in various ways. In the occupations in the United States, and there's quite a few, the U.S. military stands up prime here, and the warp speed attack is what I'm using here to stand in the list of the potential occupiers. There's a couple, but right off the bat comes to mind, the U.S. military or the Sustainability Promoting Bar Association at home. I've talked about that. Remember, reflexive law is not law. It's just this opinion, and it's going to match whatever the policy. Again, bureaucrats, no law, no due process, no property. You have no property, and like it means they don't have to give you due process when they're dealing with property, because you have none. And so the Bar Association's prime in that. That's in another type of an attack. We don't maybe realize that, but that's what's going on. And so these various occupations in our lives are sitting there, openly coverted. We think that they're under color. That's what the coversion is. They're openly coverted under cover of a misperceived, like, equal rights administered by the Civil War mandated rule of law and democracy. But democracy comes through the military overthrow through Lincoln that we hear about. That's when they're that's actually what they're talking about, whether people understand that, but that's the underlying premise for this. And though that is only provisionally so. So again, when the natives throw off the occupier, that's why there's provisional government. They're telling you it's only lasts as long as you allow it. And that's an international law. So if anyone hadn't noticed, they're subverting the republic that the people were to keep. And they do it in a very interesting, subtle way. It just really amazes me how subtle the control is. I guess part of it would be to get the slaves to believe they're not, and you got to control themselves. But this is very subtle. I don't know why I started thinking about this, but given the Civil War drums, they go to taking, let's say, a draft, because these wars they want to foment, like Lindsey Graham wants to go bomb Iran. Bomb, 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 bomb Iran. Didn't we hear that a long time ago? Yeah, they're getting that song back. It's going to try and be a hit. They're going to try and tell everybody it's technological, but you don't take out countries by aircraft. You have to get boots on the ground. So in the fanciness of all this continuing civil war, with the promotion that they don't want civil war, it looks like they want civil war. They want us fighting amongst themselves. Is it better to have to tell our sons and daughters, wait, you better look at this. Do you want to stay home and learn how to protect us and protect yourself? Or do you want to be somewhere else thinking you're doing something when you're actually committing genocide and shouldn't actually be out there? Do we have enough history in us to know the principles that cause us to do the right decisions for us here? And so we have looking at war, we're looking at the various political factions interfering with our ability to defend ourselves. And I look at some of the things that have just gone on, and I was just told about, I looked at this and said, well, how are the folks in Illinois? So we were to talk Illinois, the ill noise going on of there, the breadbasket or so, the Midwest, what is that? What euphemism do they want to put on this place? How will the folks in Illinois exercise their right that the Palestinians do to resist the tyrannical oppression of their open-air prison when the government knows where the supposed protected arms are? As Grimner would tell us, always reminded people, registration is confiscation. We read ISP unveils proposed changes of assault weapons ban rules. I won't go through too much analysis, and I won't go through the idea about what is an assault weapon. It sounds like they've tried to define one, whether that's right or wrong. It's legislation that becomes the law. And then we see here very carefully the ISP is not, no, it's not an internet service provider. This is the Illinois State Police. They are making rules for the registration of assault weapons and things designed and called assault things, weapons, all kinds of stuff now. And this is an interesting case. How are we, when the government starts to plausibly regulate these arms, cause you to register them, that how are we to be able to be defending ourselves as a Palestinian when that's all controlled, or they know, the government knows, and over time starts to collect like under red flag logs? I've talked about this as well. The threat of this is very, very important. So not only would they take away your sons and daughters, they're over there, that would help defend the veterans, that would understand how to do war in the country to defend us. They are starting to be targeted. If they haven't killed themselves, see, that's the other angle of this, through suicide. They get their weapons have to be registered, and the government knows right exactly where they're going to be, as we read here. And now in Illinois, and this is a startling little bit of story, given the Supreme Court's decisions, there is now more clarity on how Illinois State Police plan to enforce the state's assault weapons ban and registry. The agency's published its proposed rules Tuesday, better defining what's banned under the new law. banned, folks, under the new law. We have a Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. These are banned under the new law. How is that possible? Well, we're going to watch. The Supreme Court didn't want to pick this up as I get to it here. But people who owned and now banned a weapon or attachment prior to Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker signing the state's new assault weapon ban on January 10th have until January 1st to register it. They registered weapons through their firearm owner's identification card is on the ISP's website. So you maybe take this as an instruction. You can get this to figure out what you need to do. I guess everyone was given notices there. I don't know. The proposed rule will define assault weapons, attachments, and list hunting exemptions. They also line out what happens if, under the proposed rule, people who have used weapons will have 60 days to apply for an FOID card after moving to Illinois. If denied the FOID card, they must surrender their weapons, transfer them to someone who can legally have them or move them out of the state. Not much of a Second Amendment right, if we go through the 14th, do we? The proposal must be approved by the Joint Committee and Administrative Rules. The committee's next meeting is set for December 12th in Chicago. So you're hearing some old dates, and I was hoping people, and I haven't seen anybody talk to me about this. I got this late, and so you're hearing it late. However, you're hearing that they went through an administrative process for these rules, implementing the law. And so I keep telling folks, if you're going to be protective of yourself, there's going to be laws made. You're going to have to be engaged with the administrative process to give you standing. In early November here, so this is, we're just hearing this now, just now being promoted. We're behind the game already, if there's a game to play, unless it's already been done. There's a couple ways to open this back up. Like, they only pointed out hunting exemptions. What about what's the exemption for your right to alter and abolish the government? That I don't think has been touched. It's never touched. It's never touched by anybody. And I think that's one thing that would really maybe be presented back there or anywhere by the government. What is their right to infringe on your right to defend yourself against them? But in early November, ISP hosting public hearings throughout the state as a part of the rulemaking process, the definition of an assault weapon attachment was a key question, as it ought to have been, and some other things as well. But did all those here, I'm asking you, my listener, or anybody that may be pressed with this in the future, if not Illinois, but in Illinois for sure. I hope you have some listeners there. Hope you did something too, if you are. Did all the affected participate in the rulemaking session to give them standing? I'm asking, and if not, why not? And this is the point about administrative rules and what I've been trying to show people, how they get engaged to stop some of this tyranny that's going on under the color of authority, under the color of laws and legitimate laws, in the face of what we would think is totally principless, no morals, no actual cause, no reason, except that they don't want, these governments don't want you to have the weapons, and the attorneys are figuring out ways to cause that to happen over time. The question to in my mind was notice given to all private protection appliance owners that the legislation would adversely affect their right to keep and acquire privately and properly protect their reserved constitutional right to alter and abolish the government using those arms. This is the thing that, I don't ever hear anybody bring this up. That it's not your Second Amendment or your state law regarding your arms, your right to bear. It's nothing to do with hunting whatsoever. That's just an appurtenant use of the weapon for your own sustenance, which is, again, they want to tell you that it's the king's deer, and at some point there's a little good reason why you want to keep that population going, but they treat it like the king's deer if anybody thought that we went too far from England. But did those not given notice sue to enjoin the rules here in Illinois? Those of you that are still here now, one of your options are, if you weren't given proper notice, or the rules didn't address a concern for you that is legitimate, material, a constitutional reservation, are you suing to enjoin the rules for violating the Administrative Procedures Act regarding the notice and opportunity to sufficiently and adequately respond? That's one of the ways you get at it. So you have to go read your state's Administrative Procedures Act and then go look at the rules around that. Yeah, a lot of work, but this is how they incrementally take away your rights. People shrug their shoulders and say, you'll have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers. Well, they'll make your fingers cold and blue, and they'll pry it right from those fingers pretty soon. So who is responding to this? And we would think, oh, the sheriffs, and I've made comment, the sheriffs are a good line of defense, 10th Amendment, all that. You're watching. Remember, this Pritzker guy is the one that went to federal court to protect himself from the Kobe swindle, right? So these are shady people already to start with, if anybody hasn't noticed. And they're working real hard to figure out how to divest you of all your reserve powers. Again, you'll have no property and like it. That's where they're going. And the Bar Association is there to promote that. So don't think that we have a judiciary that may protect us. This is a very serious problem. I wasn't really going to talk too much about this until I saw what had happened and hadn't heard any news. And that startled me because I should have heard a whole lot of news about it relative to the people that were jumping in the administrative process to at least slow it up if they couldn't stop it. So we have who's responding. Immediately we have an article. At least 74 Illinois sheriff departments vow to defy state assault weapons ban. The sheriffs say they believe the law violates the Second Amendment. Let me interject a couple times here. I'm trying not to do too much. A lot to read through. But these points are very important. They believe. That's not a good standing here. Start off the bat. They believe that you're going to watch the governor going to come back right back at it. You know, right back at that. Not the belief, but they just don't have the authority to not enforce the law. And that's an important point that the sheriffs have to be careful of here. But just days after Illinois became the 9th U.S. state to ban assault rifles, the state already hit a roadblock to implementing the law, defiant sheriff's offices. So very good. So whatever slows it up here. But you see, there's 9 U.S. states that have banned assault rifles. When you need that so-called assault, when you need a weapon capable of stopping the government, it's likely going to be one of these. And so they're banning them. How? I don't know, have a clue how they're banning them. But they are banning them. As I said, that Second Amendment may not be around for very long. Well, we as a population keep it up. But at least 74 Illinois sheriff's departments have publicly vowed to defy elements, all right, what elements, of recent gun control law signed by Judge J.B. Pritzker, which banned assault weapons, high-capacity magazines, and switches. The offices have vowed not to check if weapons are registered with the state or house, individuals arrested only for not complying with the law. Again, keep jurisdiction separate here. Only the sheriffs are going to do this. They're not going to check for these things, but there's other law enforcement out there, and that's what I'm wanting people to be aware of. When you think the sheriff's going to help you, well, that sheriff may not, in that jurisdiction, may not get you for that, but there's other law enforcement that might. Many of the sheriffs defying, they say, remember I said, don't defy. You shouldn't defy. That's likely not going well, but even the sheriffs will defy the law as described by these articles and have described their opposition to the law as akin to civil disobedience to protect the Second Amendment. That's not very strong, is it? Civil disobedience to protect the Second Amendment that's not in their state. The Second Amendment's in the federal constitution, not the state constitution. So I'm looking at a lot of ignorance here going forward, as I usually do, fine. Again, I'll not have many people want to discuss this or figure out what we do around it, but there it is. It always seems to happen. They always hit just the wrong point. And I have a little bit of experience with a sheriff. He was a good sheriff enough that he listened and he did take action, but he only went halfway, and the federal government came in eventually and stopped him. And that was doing our mining law stuff, and I have to give him a lot of credit, but it only went so far. And that's when I started again, just, if I can predict where that limit is, and I told him so, I said, you don't know what you're walking to. Don't go talk to them. Don't, unless you read some more. We'd have to do a little more study before you go talk to a federal prosecutor on these subject matters. And he didn't listen to me, and he came back with his tail between his legs. We didn't do no more. He did enough. He protected what he did, but that was as far as he would go. So that showed us Lincoln's the post-Founding Father era right there in a sheriff that was willing. And I tell you, it's not so easy. You find a few officials that are good, and then you got to really work with them. They got to be willing to work with you. And so, anyway, I'll stall right there. Yeah, so the sheriff goes no so far, notwithstanding the 10th Amendment. And so they decided it's not constitutional law, and so that's generally what they're going to move ahead on. A civil disobedience, though, not real strong. And ultimately, the government says it's not the sheriff's job to decide on the constitution of laws, he said. That's generally something that the courts do. And I'm going to have to say that's likely, the way this will work down, that's likely what the sheriffs should have done more than just believe. They should have went to the court, I'm thinking, anymore, and get a declaratory judgment and challenge the law based on the unlawfulness that they thought they saw. The problem is the judiciary. And it's not so set in stone, as we're seeing here. You're going to find out this case has been going right through, and it's going to be going up to the Supreme Court, and it's going to have an answer here as we watch this. So we come and we start from a not very strong stance that might be placed before the courts. The courts would be retrying this whole thing, maybe retrying the 1997 Prince case, P-R-I-T-Z, with that Sheriff Mack was involved in, where they gave the sheriffs the power to kind of do this, but you'll see another sideways move. I think this may be opening that case back up for scrutiny, because it doesn't sound like they have a very much more than a feeble obstruction of the sheriff relative to this new ban. The attorneys have been working hard to figure out how to work around these things anyway. So, but the enforcement is not just with the sheriff, it's with the state police. Enforcement of this law is not with the sheriff at all anyway. So there's an interesting problem that the people are walking into here that may not be appreciated. But here we go. Pritzker was addressing the defiance, commenting about the members of law enforcement. But the reality is that he says the state police is responsible for enforcement. This is not a governor that's going to back down, and it's not going to be much for the sheriffs to be overrode. And as soon as they find out which places are doing it, the state police will start showing up and is enforcing the law. And so, watch yourselves over there in Illinois. I'm not quite sure what you would do. I would still be looking for declaratory challenges. I tried to set the law up before, maybe. There's some ways and angles on it. But so that here, I'm telling you, the challenge for your right to keep and bear arms is on. And the U.S. Supreme Court here won't take this on, despite the landmark 2020 decision in New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus the Bruin case requiring the meeting of historical traditional firearm regulation. And we get that in the next story relative to the United States Supreme Court. Let's Illinois' assault weapon ban stand for now. So we have a big question going on right here in this case. And I'm trying to figure out what would be the reason why they would not take that case, unless it's the way the participation didn't happen. That's what I'm getting back to the administrative part. No one has standing necessarily, and they're looking at that. And they're not saying anything. I've got a couple questions on whether or not there's actually a cause before the Supreme Court to take it up. And this ban will go through as long as the government has the presumption of right here, and which they do. States have that privilege way beyond anybody else. So how is the Supreme Court will not take this ban on? And so my question now is, how is this legislation different than California? The California legislation that was just banned itself, it was enjoined. That's maybe where you're going to find out the due diligence on this analysis will tell us what the attorneys in Illinois did in order to make it just different. I don't know what it is. I haven't looked that close. Anybody who's got an interest in this will have to find out about that and compare those laws and look for anomalies in the proceedings of the cases that are going through. So the other thought was that someone to sue to enjoin the requirement here when you're looking at the implementation, because I can't tell you how serious this really is. And people they look past the application, but that's where it all begins and ends right there. That's how the connection gets made. The applique, you stick it to yourself. Has anybody being required to file an application, sued to enjoin the application, filing out of it, because just putting one's name on the application is a condemnation. It says that you're already in violation. It's also telling you that you're one who would resist the government given the time and the right, the need to exercise your right to abolish, which the rule procedures and the law do not address. Or maybe a tactic, and I'm just suggesting some things. People sometimes don't have an idea where to start. I'm not saying do it. I'm saying think about doing it. Really consider what's going on before you act. And have the whole path figured out, and I would say with the caboose of corruption sitting there on where it will go to off, it'll be derailed. But even so, you file an application anyway in blank to get denied the card, that FOID card, to give you standing to sue for the infringement of the organic right, if you will, the organic reservation, and based in the historic and customary anonymous holding, bearing, and keeping of an arm, that the current officials appear to this no different than British occupiers did at the time, and you frame this condition maybe around that. I'm only offering some ideas. Again, it's not something I'm doing. but it's things you're going to have to become very adept at moving in through rights or considerations that were never done either by the legislature. They didn't talk to it. The state police didn't address it. They were required to address it. They didn't tell you that when they didn't address that they were intending to come after that thing that you wanted yourself, case by case basis. And you're going to have to create this challenge, whether you sue to have to be told to file the application because that condemns you and violates your right to be anonymous to who would resist under the right to alter and abolish, or whether or not you do it in blank just to get the denial to then go in and say you shouldn't have to be do this anyway and challenge it from that perspective. Where things I'm looking at, why would the United States Supreme Court not take this on when it sounds like two or three other cases, they've already enjoined those bans. Something's different about this case. So, again, these encroachments are incremental. As we move in through the Supreme Court and look at the Supreme Court, a report came out this last week. The title of this report is Machines Cannot Fully Replace Key Actors in Court, U.S. Chief Justice Said. In a recent end-of-year report, Chief Justice John G. Roberts, Jr. addressed the increasing influence of artificial intelligence within the American judicial system. While acknowledging the advancements in AI technology, Roberts highlighted several concerns regarding its implications for the legal profession. So he cites, and I've reported here behind the woodshed, which I'll call a non sequitur for our purposes, these things, and a significant concern he raises is that the potential for misinformation and errors stemming from AI-generated content. He cited instances where AI-produced legal briefs contained inaccuracies, including fictitious cases and misrepresented facts. He stressed that the distinct human gestures and feelings, like a shaky voice or a brief moment of lost eye contact, retain their significance in legal proceedings. Listen to what's really at play here when you're in a court as well, but this is a report talking about AI, and we're losing the human contact, the animal contact. He stated, quote, machines cannot fully replace key actors in court, close quote, underscoring the importance of human judgment in interpreting subtle cues and making informed decisions. Actors, folks, actors in court is what you're looking at there. These are occupiers, and they're acting, and they're in costumes. And we agree and believe and almost have to that they are the independent bearer of justice. And it's actually just rule of law and nothing more. But I want to touch back on what implications is he referring to. That digital artificial intelligence, so-called, as erroneous as it is, might be found more just than its analog occupier and cause the actors in court to exit stage leftists. Yes, even the so-called conservatives continuing without checking Lincoln's provisional national governance would have trouble with that. See, an AI would actually be able to use the procedural laws, and when you come in with a challenge, it would just look straight at it, not deny that there wasn't a fraud. They would actually have to implement, not see a defect in the charging instrument and look away. It would not have a question. It could care less. He said about fictitious cases he mentioned and misrepresented facts are dealt with in an answer of an alleged government miscreant through the pre-plea remedies and avoidance I've talked about. One of them is considered a set-aside in some jurisdictions, and the method in others is called a motion to quash. And you get rid of these indictments and these report these conditions that create potential for a jurisdiction by those methods. They run these fictitious cases like this and don't look at that at all. They'll deny all this stuff. I've been enough involved to know that's what goes on to test it. As soon as I see them fail, I know the direction the case is going to go, generally and usually, and it's been pretty accurate so far. And then these challenges that you do in the beginning, the challenges to jurisdiction, are mostly, if not completely, matters of law. What is the pertinence of distinct human gestures and feelings, like a shaky voice in a brief moment of lost eye contact, or a human judgment in interpreting subtle cues and making informed decisions in these matters of law? Where the government here, fraud or trust breach is alleged in a complaint and shown upon the record as a matter of law, where government has no power, right, title, or privity to obstruct in any form or fashion my listener's right of ingress or egress over the highway, for instance, what purpose is there in interpreting subtle cues more than immediately stopping the governmental agent's fraud, something the judicial analog currently protects, as everyone witnessed in Covey swindle? I'm pausing here. I hope you put all this together. This is how simple it is to see how comprehensive the corruption is in these courts. It's not just that they're corrupt. It's just how pervasive it is and how it follows the same pattern. And I'm arguing here, in some instances, AI might actually be better. There's nothing here that the Chief Justice is concerned about that becomes relevant in these types of cases. Why I was really kind of thrilled, though I wouldn't necessarily just drop all my chips on it, but the AI, I think it was in New York, the kid that developed the challenges to traffic tickets. I think it was maybe parking tickets, a limited class. He was able to eliminate maybe 80% of the tickets because they were fraudulent on their face. And so all that would have been going to the government, being paid to commit fraud, and had been before. And so that's what I'm talking about here, things like that. If it's just a comparative thing, there is no... The Chief Justice is off point here. The subtle cues here are evident where the executive give the judicial its talking points in some form of defense when you're watching these, as they go through these things and they're going to take away your rights. You're listening for these things if you know to listen for them. You see the government agents, they give the talking points to the judge. The judge, without notice, just pick, without any error, without any commotion, just picks those talking points up and moves them along. That's the subtle cues that they're actually using. And they keep the government in control and establish precedent and deny the victims of the government fraud justice, denying they were harmed at all in a lot of cases. When I say here the people, all of them are, since the Civil War, all of them, all of us, are disenfranchised slaves. I've talked about this last week. And if you look at what I'm saying and you kind of put it together, can you appreciate what I was saying last week about disenfranchised slaves being everyone? Look at 42 U.S.C. 1981, municipal law. Your exactions of every kind are extortions and no other. They're wrongful extortions by definition illegal. So we're essentially disenfranchised. And it's not just voting. See, that's typically what it is. It expands out, disenfranchisement. So if you apply what I'm saying, do you appreciate more now how this is happening to us? Right in front of us. It's just amazing. I mean, I would have never guessed this. I'm too naive, maybe, about all this. It had to come at me the hard way, I suppose, get my attention, like I've told you before. My first interaction happened to be on a traffic issue that was made up against me. And I am looking then at the traffic stop, five cops wanting to shoot me. I don't know how I escaped. I really don't know to this day. I don't know how I walked away. But there it was. Boy, was that that was meant for me. That was providence to tell me, wake up. Things are not going the way you thought it was. This is not the world you ever thought it was. And you better be careful and watch out what's going on. And so we're here now. But so I'm thinking, although this is one of those typical sustainability reports, when you look at the report, what they're saying, he's identifying the danger to the occupying power and to avoid it, to sustain its plunder under the color of truth, justice, and the American way, though without providing the substance of truth, justice, and the American way, even subverting that way. As we're going to find a theme here, and it may be the title of the broadcast, subverting the Republic, that all the kind of the ways that they do that, right in front of us. But finally, he says, we move on here, while recognizing its capacity to enhance access to information for both legal professionals and the public, he cautioned against the potential risks associated with AI, such as privacy breaches and the potential dehumanization of the legal process. He's against dehumanization of the system. He's a humanist, having no intention but to treat everyone as a subject humans. And remember, that term, if you look back, I think it's the etymology here, it was used only since about the 1400s of Catholic religion derivation. That was animals. And one of the definitions that came through and became real popular, subsequent to me mentioning it, but I don't know if I was the source, that was that the definition for a human is a monster without inheritable blood, not a man or women with property and rights. And when you look at what, like someone like Klaus Schwab would be saying, you have no property and like it, you have no inheritable blood to have property anyway. They're going to treat you like those humans. He's talking about in a humanist fashion, this guy, in the Supreme Court. So he says the potential dehumanization of the legal process. He wants you to be, he doesn't want you to be men and women. What it looks like it's saying to me. They need you to be animals so they can treat you like chattel. Cattle, excuse me. Well, either word, it doesn't matter. So, I find his statements are pretty good. This is, like I said, a sustainability report. They tell you where the threat to them is. And if you look very carefully and look inside the words, you can reframe it to actually maybe derive the actual thing they're talking about. Now, you think that's outlandish? Go look around and look at the world. Look at the world that you're living and tell me that that's not what they've been doing to us. And if you get this little magic decoder ring, you get your little crystal ball and look through that, you're going to see what I've been talking about, and the whole world opens up into a different view. It's no longer subjective. It's no longer just an opinion. And you learn how to keep your mouth shut. And like I tell you, you put a lot of stuff in your hip pocket. You don't tell a lot of things out that you're looking at people that have an authority decision, but you work the system that they are have to attend to, the duties that they're obligated to in order to work your way through it. You don't tell them how many rights you have. You don't tell them you're a sovereign. You perform the sovereign. You do the things to avoid their control, their disenfranchisement. You don't put yourself in that subject status. You just don't tell them that. That doesn't work. You got to have an alternative created factual basis. As I've told you simply, and I won't go too far, when I found out mining law gives us the disposal of the rights, and that's a trust duty to protect in the government, that's where I want to stand. Is it's an obligation. They can't make me into someone who's subject. I'm to be left alone to go do what Congress told me. Otherwise, I lose it. And they're not supposed to interfere with that. It's a takings. And so you all of a sudden, you flipped everything into the capacity of Constitution. I'm not talking about constitutional rights. I'm just talking in the terms of it and adding in, well, how? But there's a trust breach, an official trust breach. That turns into that extortion and coercion I told you. Those are felonies. They immediately happen on the official side. And so you have a thing that you could, a foundation from which you stand that's not subject. And that's how you'd start to do this. And I shudder when I say that. You just don't say these words and it's done. But again, no silver bullets. But that's the nubbins of how this, what I was exposed to, the revelation to me, on how you place yourself. You don't call yourself a sovereign. You don't call yourself free. You don't say you have rights. You just say you exercise the rights that they can't touch. You don't talk about them. And there's part of the answer for most of you if you do some study on this. But they can't dehumanize. You are not dehumanizable because you fall into, if you will, the man or the capacity of the woman with the rights and the property that the government was obligated to protect, not the ones they come to extort from you. Their property would be fiat currency. They can do whatever they want with that. They don't have to extort from you. That's not even yours to have a say on it anyway. But it's their property. It's not even that you don't have property and like it. No, it's their property. They're going to control it. And if you're using it, they have the power to tell you about that. Another thing here, we're subverting the Republic. And my answer to the lead of the next notice here in what will be an article, it would be here, not much. But some might be interested that the Epstein files here are unsealed. And what have we hear in the article, what have highly anticipated docs revealed? I'm just going to touch this a little lightly, and we're going to keep moving on, but there's lessons and things to notice and see, and I think I want to just make a little bit of a record of that for the purposes of the broadcast that we read here. The United States District Court of the Southern District of New York has unsealed hundreds of documents connected to the accused sex trafficker, that's what he was doing too, Jeffrey Epstein, identifying multiple, he didn't kill himself, you know that, don't you? Identifying multiple individuals, some of which included prominent politicians and notable public figures. The latest filings includes excerpts of depositions with the former British socialite Ghislaine Maxwell and Virginia Kuefra, who previously accused Maxwell of facilitating her sexual abuse after being introduced to Epstein, among other witnesses. Now remember to keep this in this context, please. Witnesses now. And we already heard that you just can't take the statement of somebody. It has to be developed. So this is going to be our Achilles heel looking at all this, to their potential benefit here. The unsealed documents do not specifically include the list of Epstein's clients. Remember that. It also does not directly equate named individuals with committing crimes. Additionally, names are expected to be released on Thursday. This is going to be an ongoing thing. I also noticed some pictures and images of some of the documents, and they're still redacted names. So remember that part, too. You know, here, while the new release does offer some new details of Epstein's operations, it also rehashes previously known ties between the New Yorker and his associates, such as Prince Andrew and lawyer Alan Dershowitz. Here, a comment in the articles offer that it was a standard U.S. high-end introduction and escort racket. The movie Sound of Freedom covers the subject, and the U.S. government and NGOs are the world's largest trafficking organization. If you take this link, go to the article comment, and you'll see this stated. That speaks not to the Sound of Freedom. Maybe go look at the Sound of Freedom. But this is, remember, what I found in 2005 looking and studying the child services state-run, judicially overseen protection racket that was coming to the same stuff back then. But I believe this whole thing here, I believe this is all a delay tactic by those protecting that operation. It's not likely any real meat here will be allowed to be published. And we can see that further as we read in the one article. The unsealed documents do not specifically include a list of Epstein clients. And that's kind of telling us where the limit's going to be. We can take great entertainment in it, but that's, I think, maybe what ultimately it ends up being. And we can also read, while the new release does not offer some new details of Epstein's operation, it also rehashes previously known. So, again, they're not giving you a ton of extra stuff here. And relative to my experience back in about 2003 or so, trying to expose what appears now to be an apparent arm of the child services racket that was showed me information is really hard to get, and the public officials, they're all protective, and then you'll find public officials like senators, the lawmakers, who didn't have a clue what they were bringing in. It was like Dracula bringing in this vampire thing into the state. It ended up being, it's all federal. And that, when I track that back through, that's through the Rights of Child. That's back to the UN. That's in a bunch of attorneys making all this up. And you see here that the gatekeepers, the public officials, hard to get, but they also use the judges are the ones that are gatekeeping. And that's how I found it. I found real procedural problems with what a judge was doing in a child services case back then. And so that I happened to hear that, and I told the mother and the father, did you see what he just did there? They weren't quite up on the procedures, and when I explained it to them, then that triggered her to understand what they were actually up to, and she actually became a pretty big warrioress relative to that. Problem is that she's now dead in trying to fight that. So this is Pamela Gaston. You might find some information on her. They didn't understand what the judge was actually telling me, that he was a cover-up agent, and so that kind of extrapolated out. This is the Bar Association members, and look around. Alan Dershowitz pops up, look around. These will be a common theme as well. But I don't think all this is being exposed, and you will find out who's running Operation Compromise, as I'll call it, for the time being. Though these handlers all seem to be Zionists as well, and at the local level and state agencies at that time, I understood and found documents that the agencies are paid 5,000 federal bucks that's authorized by Congress themselves to secure children, some of which would eventually get lost in the system, they said, and others were disappeared, that euphemistically called a runaway. I've talked about all this. This is my view in the past, looking forward and seeing what's going on today, and just it's reflecting very well much the same. It's just like an arm of what was going on, just a very big enterprise. Shockingly so, but it's still going on, and we're not hearing who is running that. Another here report explains that the court documents will say, as I would thoroughly expect from my findings, that Epstein docs reveal government complicity. The document dump also exposed details about the pedophile's friendships with bold-faced names like Prince Andrew and Bill Clinton. Harvard law professor and vocal advocate for the abolition of age of consent laws, Alan Dershowitz, was shown to be deeply involved in negotiating the notorious 2007 non-prosecution agreement that shielded Epstein from the consequences of molesting dozens, if not hundreds, of underage girls. And it appears from the document here, the testimony, that he participated. So let's be very careful. For as much as we would want to condemn, I want to hold the innocent until proven guilty, but how much do you take absent the court? How much do you take and see the interlocking of this and the continual actions taken by people and their associations? And here we can read Dershowitz visited Epstein's Florida mansion pretty often and received massages while he was there. And if you look through the documentation, which I haven't, just some parts of it, this massage is like a euphemism as well. So again, we might have the witnesses. It's like hearsay to us, and that's going to be the problem. The report notes here, and I will remind my listener, remember there's multifacets of an occupation going on, that Harvard is a part of the university system. The attorney is a member of the occupying forces controlling society under the color of the judicial branches of the United States and state governments. And Dershowitz appears by record an ardent Zionist and an apparent genocide proponent. So these people are kind of, you just look at what they've done their own selves, and it's kind of condemning on its face. But moving here, so we look at Dershowitz again. A key figure in all this, a key figure in protecting Epstein, who didn't kill himself, so there's another play going, it's reported that Dershowitz is defending the Zionist Federation against the South African International Court of Justice genocide complaint. So this guy's central. He's just one of these other figures that seems to be everywhere and seemingly to be the same party, part of the party of the Zionist Federation as well. We read hundreds of men named in the unsealed documents as having been involved in Epstein's sprawling sex trafficking mail operation are witnessed by people, confirming to me what I've called and deemed at this point Operation Compromise, compromising your politicians, compromising whomever it was. Anybody who had a say was going to be placed here. And they're not the only one, as I may have mentioned in the past. There's another set of it. It's not just Epstein. This is a broad, comprehensive encroachment on this country, subverting everything that we may have held sacred, going after people where they're the weakest. They're, I guess, apparent Achilles heel when you have nobody, a principle, working principle, and determined to hold it. But high-end sex ring in Boston and D.C. areas was a honeypot scheme by Russia, China, South Korea, or even Israel to ensnare U.S. officials, intelligence experts' belief. So that tells you the condition of the intelligence expert, that they don't even know where it comes from. But this recent interstate honeypot brothel bust, together with the case dump and on the unknown Epstein client list, does anyone think these folks or the politicians or the military officials represented here represent your interest when they're involved with this stuff? And I just got to thinking about the dynamic of the politics going on, and maybe Stormy Daniels' fiasco is the least of our worries and a distraction here relative to what we're seeing now through the Epstein and the cover-up there and all that we're not going to see and all the answers we're not going to get, and likely not to be able to follow through when we in looking at this thing where they've not, the client list won't be published, no one's being charged on this Epstein thing, but they go after Trump here, where we see Stormy Daniels, maybe just another distraction. Okay, that may have all happened. They were supposedly, Trump's not stupid, he's a businessman, he made deals, right? So then he got condemned for that, but he gets put on a pedestal about all this. As we read, Pedo Island, the corrupted system that created Jeffrey Epstein survives his downfall. New court papers have been released in the sex trafficking saga, but the people named in them are likely to escape unscathed while they attack Trump. It's pretty fascinating, the game played here. Whether Trump is a player in it, I don't quite know yet. He's not clean. He's not the white hat everyone puts on it. He caused this nation a ton of trouble. I'll just name Covey Swindle as the first one. and we'll just let it rest for this conversation right now. So this whole thing that's gone down, what's going down, what we're witnessing, the history, this condition with Epstein, it's like a tip of an iceberg almost. There's just so much going on in the situation, partly why I don't cover it. Everything's in hearsay. We're likely not going to see a bunch. It would be nice that we did. I mean, better than nice. Maybe the government starts to function better and starts to show what we people that it's there to do our bidding, not the bidding of these people. But there's so much involved, and if memory serves here, I want to just show a bit of the complexity around what we think is just Epstein. If I remember right, remember the NXIVM boss, Sarah Brumfman, or Charles and Edgar Brumfman, or Leslie Wexler. These were aligned with the Mega Group. That was an element within the Transatlantic financial establishment, tying into Mossad and Monica Lewinsky, and that Epstein belonged to an intelligence group, and the U.S. attorney in Miami, Alexander Acosta, said he was told to leave it alone. And this is the guy who cut that Jeffrey Epstein sweetheart deal, the non-prosecution plea back in 2007 that the Dershowitz was involved in. In other words, as I'm looking at this, and I'm hoping you're seeing it too, maybe you have a different, more comprehensive knowledge. I'm barely hitting this. But we're looking at the situation to continue with this attorney being involved and doing a sweetheart deal, being told to left alone and doing so. He's just another bar member, another part of the occupation. But he has the power to indict a ham sandwich and get a conviction, but didn't. Just like the indicting a ham sandwich and getting a conviction, they're going after Trump kind of like that. 91 felonies and FBI raids. And to my knowledge, as we're even this information coming out, Trump never flew to Epstein's Island on deplane, boss. Yeah, we're likely not getting at those on the client list or those executing Operation Compromise in the land of the rule of law and democracy. We're watching who the operators are, who the protectors of the operation are. And this is mainly the problem with our country. While we're all clamoring over the personality, the celebrity, there's some real, real defects going on and allowed to perpetrate. And I mentioned Mega Group. I want to give a link to you can read more about that. I typed in a couple things. My memory was kind of just failing a little bit. I thought these names were important, relating the Brofmans and all this other stuff. We're all together. And I did find a link. You can go read through. It's a very nice put-together history. All the way back. A lot of stuff. There's so much that can be involved in all this. But I wanted to focus again. It's a financial group as well. And they're in it to protect themselves. And maybe why we see the fomentation of destruction. They'll see this article. It's the clash of civilizations. It keeps them in power. Like the bankers, the financial, the industrialists. And so that sits there as well. There's so much going on. All the things, the sins of the world are what these people deal in. And worse, it seems, I feel there could be worse, that are integrated and cause the destruction of our republic. And we're a people that's focused, I've been seeing in the last decade or more, 20 years or so, we're focused on the wrong thing. We're focused on we have rights. And I'm telling you, you don't go fight for the right. You just assert it and then you show the other side can't infringe. And when they do, they're a criminal. That's really how you assert your right. You don't claim it. You just do it. And then you tell them they can't touch it and that they are. And that's enough. That's a little nutshell, a thumbnail. Don't run your life on it. But you start from there to start studying. And relative to Trump and him not being involved, yet seeing all these felonies and seeing the attack on him, and again, I'm not that much of a supporter to the celebrity or the politics or any of that. We're looking at a condition. Why? When we watch nobody getting no client list, no prosecutions under what seems to be pretty clear violations to, abuses to people. Well, and that would expose the bigger system, as I've been explaining since I started broadcasting. And my experience relative to child services and the federal government itself paying the money to get these kids into a system and then all of a sudden lose them. How do you do that? Well, you do it this way. For what reason? For this reason. But why Trump? Why? And then we see these, how is this a setup or that it's a setup against Trump? And again, I'm one to say they're all innocent until proven guilty. We really should need to put it in a court of law, but we can't even trust the courts now. So yeah, we do. We laugh at that one. However, we're looking at making a proof through the notices that we're given to try and make sense of what we're seeing. Place things where they belong and make things important that need to be important and look to see whether or not we can make an effect on that to stop it if it's bad or exalt it if it's good. It's always not bad. We may want to promote good. But why and how could the NPR publish a J6 clash with police hours before anything happened? When we start looking at how ludicrous it is what's going on with Trump, how simple things could be proved out. When we read here, Trump supporters storm the United States Capitol, clash with police. And we have a timestamp of January 6, 2021, 9:33 in the morning. For those of you interested in 369 and what that might mean. And that is with a picture stating, timestamp at 9:33, with a picture stating Trump supporters clash with police and security forces as they try to storm the Capitol, Washington, D.C. on Wednesday. Demonstrators breached the security and entered the Capitol as Congress debated the 2020 electoral vote certification. And then I found a timeline, and I saw that, I go, wow, look at how interesting this is all pulling together. They were like, not unlike, you know, again, they were making news before it was anything. They're making it up, but they had the picture, right? Everyone can believe it if you look past this stuff. No one makes the correlation. It's reported through the Washington Post. And again, we're talking about they can indict a ham sandwich and go and get a conviction, which looks like Trump. And they won't go after the client list. They won't go after the people that are witnessed to have harmed people, children, and how, and horrendously, and who knows who we don't know about. But we read this. Just before noon, Trump gets on stage and gives an hour-long speech to the crowd of thousands. He doesn't explicitly tell his supporters to enter the Capitol, but he tells them to walk down to the Capitol. Now, you read the story, we see the crowd doesn't start walking to the Capitol until after 1 p.m. Now, did you keep the track of the time? I said 9:33, NPR posts that there's clashes already going on. 9:33 in the morning. At 1 o'clock, he's telling them to go now. At 1:21, Trump returns to the White House almost as soon as he enters the Oval Office, his overcoat still on. The White House employee tells him that the supporters have breached the Capitol. So how does the NPR file the report about the clash that morning, January 6th, 2021, 9:33 in the morning, Eastern Time, when the people don't get to their house until their house, that's their house, the Congress, their house, the people, until sometime after 1, is likely the same how the BBC televised Building 7 was destroyed while it's clearly seen in the background 20 or so minutes before it collapses at free fall speed into its own footprint, despite no plane hitting Building 7. These predictive events in my mind become curiouser and curiouser when I'm looking at something like the Epstein issue. What this is a mass subversion of our republic, a mass subversion of our system. And so it makes us want to say, you shrug our shoulders and say there's no life, justice, and all the American way and all that. But that's what we have to really hold on to and fight for. That's required that we do that. Otherwise, we're going to get more of this. I can't even see how it doesn't go that way and worse. It just gets worse. And here we have other highly anticipated terror events that are planned, threatened? No, warned there by the FBI have begun. So fear, we go again. As we keep moving this thing along, these people are really pulling us by the nose wherever we go. They go after Trump. Totally, the facts wouldn't support anything that's going on. I just have to say it again. Trump has not been put through a court of law, even as corrupt as they are, and found guilty of insurrection. So let's just end that as well. And I think if this kind of other kind of stuff could come in, we would see that. But here we have the ongoing, current, new modernizing of the Civil War to bring division inside our society. And as we can now, we learn to read government as the predictor of what they're planning to tell us. When they say, like I said early on, that they don't want to, the United States doesn't want a conflict to go wider in the Middle East, that's exactly what they're looking for. And then good old Lindsey Graham, Congress creator that he is, he comes right out and tells you that's what they want. And so bomb threats trigger mass evacuations across the United States. A series of hoax emails threats have forced some states to clear their administrative buildings. Now remember, when the FBI warned us, they were talking about you coming on the back of the Hamas-Israel conflict, right? They were saying Hamas was coming. But we read closely at the story, nothing about that has come out, but they did happen. They did predict that they were going to happen, and they started happening. The incidents followed a spate of swatting incidents with false reports of gunfire at the homes of public figures. Last week, pranksters targeted a number of U.S. officials with the calls, as well as billionaire currency speculator George Soros. In the threatening email sent on Wednesday morning, the author said that they had replaced multiple explosives inside your state capital. The FBI later issued a statement on Wednesday calling the email threats a hoax that was being taken very seriously because the danger they posed to innocent people, multiple news outlets reported. And the FBI already knows these events, all of them are hoaxes, yeah? Unless, how do they do that? But the most dangerous threat in the article is this. Here, listen up to what they say. Gabe Sterling, the chief operating officer in the Georgia Secretary of State's office, wrote on X, isn't that an interesting place everybody goes through now? But that, this is an official state, that there will be, quote, chaos agents sowing discord for 2024, close quote, and urge citizens not to let them increase tensions. And all I can say when I read that's a threat. That's planting the seed for a future order through chaos. And wait until one of those bombs kills a lot of people. It freaks people out. That'll exponentially increase tensions as planned. So we're looking for that to happen. These things seem to go along. If it doesn't, they're postponing it. But this is how they play us as people. And this is how we start getting off on the wrong foot. Like, let me just interject. The next, let's say, Kobe swindle would bleed. They'll freak people out when you start seeing people bleeding from their eyes or other orifices. You will freak out. And the government comes in and says that's from a natural pathogen. You'll believe them. That's how fast this will happen. And so, don't think it can't happen to any one of us to believe what's going on. We still have people believing that there was a COVID. They call it COVID. No one speaks of an infectious agent. That's how mind control we all are. I say all, but you know. I mean, it's just pervasive, this mind behavioral controlling system. They know what they're talking about. So here last week I was observing to the sound mind of my listener the increasingly poignant references and discussions to or about the Civil War as they continue that consideration here in this broadcast, the cognitive warfare drumming, the building pressures caused in priming the domestic war front we've been hearing now since Trump. The U.S. is facing now, this article, 1860 scale national breakdown threat over state ballot bans against Trump. So, story comes right into feed, right into all this. So this is, to me, always fascinating. And I hope you, right, for you think this is, I think so. Do you think this is fascinating to watch how this rolls out so consistently? Now, I'm talking from Sputnik now. Now, but remember, Sputnik gets their stories from other places, too, as well. They're not quite as isolated as the mainstream media wants you to think. However, I think this is fascinating how all this always comes along together. Why the Civil War beating of the drums now in the United States, the division, the fomenting of division, they're wanting us to, again. And they're pushing for the more perfectuous union this time, the globally promoted direct democracy that really takes away the democracy. Let's say in a capitalistic society, the democracy, the demo, is the people doing their thing and working their what they want to do, having property. For us miners, it would be production, producing something we want to produce for somebody to use. Each man or woman, that's the demo, doing that. But that's not what the direct democracy under the international sphere is. The underlying cause of the, as we read here, the underlying cause of this U.S. facing 1860 scale national breakdown. Why all of a sudden? Well, here it is. I told you it was coming. I'm just barely on time to tell you, even though it's been watching this for quite a few months, actually been a few years, they turn up the heat just a little bit, little bit. We see the underlying cause of the entire crisis and the collapse of the United States' ancient and unreformed political system said, the bottom line is the American democracy is falling apart, Lazar said. The faults in the current system have been apparent, exposed, and have only gotten worse for decades, he said. So this results, though, have been caused by the Lincolnization of the nation into a post-founding father era. But let's get to the point of the pitch for the more perfectus union here. The results will be a replay of 1860, in which Lincoln was off the ballot in 9 southern states, Stephen A. Douglas was off the ballot in 2 up north, and John Breckinridge, the southern Democrat candidate, was barred in 4, and John Bell, the Constitutional Union candidate, was barred in 3, Lazar said. The result was the almost immediate slide into civil war, now estimated to have cost 800,000 lives out of the total population of only 30 million, he said. The underlying cause of the entire crisis is the collapse of the United States' ancient and unreformed political system, he said. The bottom line is the American democracy is falling apart regardless. Quote, America's hyper-federal system of 50 separate state elections is so baroque and antiquated that it fairly cries out for an overhaul. Yet fundamental structural reform is something our sclerotic constitutional system will not allow. Consequently, the decay can only intensify, Lazar said. So this is pushing, they've been doing this for a long time, pushing for reform. Can we just say transformation, the modernization of the post-founding father era? I think we can. This is called the direct democracy. This is an international imposition, a foreign imposition. It's a foreign promotion. And this is, again, sustainability has an outcome. This is the Hegelian process. They seed the facts, they seed the knowledge that you think you have, and then they start working the edges until you decide that's the right direction you want to go, and then you do it by your own volition, and they can say they didn't force you. And they didn't, actually. So this desired outcome or result will be because the historian Bruce Torres puts in this story as well. The crisis can only serve to destroy the last vestiges of trust and confidence that the American people still have in their political system, he said. Quote, as many are now saying, the majority will believe our institutions are rotten, and so we'll go along with the same plan to follow, he governed by some foreign international power, because we will think the American experiment failed, so let's try something else. So the point here I take is we the people did not keep the republic. So it's moving to something more globally sustainable, a more perfect modernized union, i.e. the sustainable militant technocracy. And if you let it, it's going there. And this is the thing about keeping, it's still there to keep. And look how they describe, they say it's not workable. They convince us that it's not workable, when in fact it was abandoned a long time ago, and we need to gather the good parts back. The Civil War will only invigorate and justify that outcome that they're looking for, that they say is inevitable anyway. So what would my listener think on this? If you look through this, they're promoting now direct democracy. They're not telling you direct democracy. That's what they're promoting. If we don't keep to the principles we want, they're going to get what they want. As I've identified here, your Second Amendment is other than to further or accelerate the slide into the stinking abyss. Right? It's useless against this threat. They're posing against, these people pose against us, and now the population is being primed to resort to that cognitive warfare, defeating the inhabitants themselves. The powers, the militaries, don't have to do it. You will do it yourselves. Part of me is just fascinating to watch this dynamic, how they've set this up, and it's working. It just blows me away. And we can read further. Bruce further expands, consistent with my observations here, adding that the arguments for barring Trump from the Republican primary ticket were not valid. Quote, it's a travesty. If, as I believe, Trump has not been convicted of insurrection in any case that I know of, And that's the problem. If this process continues this way, nothing good comes out of it. And that's what I look at. That's exactly right, but that's the plan. They're looking that nothing good can come out of it. And what I keep saying is that we as the people have to really think through what's going on and really have to come to terms with what's going on to avoid it, but to not go down the path that's set up for us to go. It's well lit, I can tell you that, and we think that's the way to go. And relative to elections, and before that, we have campaigns, and again, this is all wrapping up in that election year, too. You see how it's all coming together, how this may actually blow right through and become a real problem if we're not aware, like they did to us in COVID swindle. I can't believe 80% just went with it, and that's our problem as a population. The campaigns before an election, you do that as a candidate. But despite the post-founding era, constitutions or the perceptions by the natives of the Constitution and due process is still relevant. And this is part of, I found this story, quite an interesting little throw us a bone type thing. Appeals court wipes conviction of ex-congressman. Federal appeals court Federal appeals court panel. Wiped ex-Representative Jeff Fortenberry's, Republican of Nebraska, conviction of lying to the FBI about an illegal campaign contribution, ruling Tuesday that he was not tried in the proper venue. Now remember here, folks, I was talking earlier, pre-plea remedies and avoidance. This is one of them. Now, this is not a silver bullet. This may never, ever, you may never see this in your car cases if you ever get them, if you're unfortunate enough to have to be in here. But you may never see this, but this is one of those pre-plea remedies avoidance. They argued, and they had to go to appeal, so the first judge missed it, it was improper venue. What's that? The place where you're having the trial. Fortenberry's trial took place in a state where no charged crime was committed and before a jury drawn by the vicinage of the federal agencies that investigated the defendant, wrote U.S. District Judge James Donato, who sat on the appeals court by designation. The Constitution does not permit this. Fortenberry's convictions are reversed so that he may be retried, if at all, in the proper venue, the 23-page opinion continued. Prosecutors did not charge Fortenberry over the contribution itself, instead prosecuting him on two counts of making false statements and one count of scheming to falsify and conceal material facts. The trial judge enabled a jury trial to move forward in California by ruling that false statement violations occur not only where they are uttered, but also where they have an effect on a federal investigation. The donation investigation was run out of the FBI's Los Angeles office. Quote, we conclude that an effects-based test for venue of Section 1001 offense has no support in the Constitution. The text of the statute or historical practice, wrote Donato, who was appointed by former President Obama. So this is a challenge which should be done prior to plea, but nevertheless, the want of lawful venue invalidates the power of a court to hear and determine or to try. This complaint that was put in there. It's one of the things to qualify when responding to the court purportedly having a complaint before it that suggests that it has jurisdiction. In this case here, because of the place is perceived to be affected by an alleged wrong acts of someone, this is not a lawful foundation to establish venue for trial to be held in that place other than where the complained wrong occurs. And so this is just basic law like 101 here. And this is the thing I'm talking about when I say pre-plea remedies avoidance. Venue is one of the challenges you can do. Personam jurisdiction is others. The sufficiency, adequacy, or the truthfulness of a complaint. These are all sitting there. The only way I know to tell you what you're starting to look for is if you go to would be to go look for in your state law for something called set aside. I found them in traffic tickets. They actually delineate some now of the ability, the things that the legislature requires the court go through to make sure is correct. And that's where you could start seeing the legislature saw lots of problems. They wanted to fix it. They'll tell the judiciary what to expect. And that's been reviewed for adequacy or not. A lot of times these due process things are pretty good, but that's one of them. You'll find that in traffic. I found that in a traffic code. It was a set aside on a traffic complaint. It's listed. You don't have to go research very much. You're not going to find much that I know of, and I haven't found some recently on the phrase pre-plea remedy and avoidance. I think they've wiped every piece of information away from the internet. But anyway, moving into this, moving on in through having the proper information on a complaint and being able to move forward, relevant to getting beyond the founding father era here, the transformation, the modernization of the more perfectus union, the sustainable unity, this next here notice we're going to read on cognitive warfare through censorship is understood best through a perspective of the globalist cabal. Remember, I'm saying these statements from officials are really that they telling themselves how they're going to avoid the threat that you are, the risk that you are. I don't know how many reports and notices I talk about that have that built right into them. For those of you that have been, I hope you see that as my listener for any length of time, and how you can hold a couple of different mind beliefs about what you read too. You can, okay, they're talking in this regard for them, they're talking like this for us, they're talking like in this capacity for those, and you go and you keep that in your mind when you're reading, and pretty soon it really starts to develop a very comprehensive potential understanding. Because there's always that little bitty element you may have perceived incorrectly. Sometimes you may reread and find more accentuation on something you missed. However, you get a better comprehensive view of what this notice, that's why I call it notice. Depends on who you are and what the notice is and whether it's even for you. But when they're telling someone else, you can tell what that is for them. And a lot of these notices, like the government, the Supreme Court justice, I think they're talking about the court themselves. Warning the court themselves about what they are doing to us, if we can see that. In the cognitive warfare front here, it goes on through this type of censorship as we read, and this global touch. So you remember, all these are it's all international. I don't know how to say it otherwise. We haven't really kept the republic, so it's not really separate quite yet, or again, which I think it really needs to. But not by the understanding of most people that I've seen throughout this country at this point. Some are really at least consistent with what my research does, but we're really close. But it's not very many of us. And to my mind, it's not an answer. Anything we know is not an answer. It's the start of fixing what's attacking us, what's occupying us. And we hear UNESCO's pull to regulate speech on social media pushes its own toolkit, digital safety, which will tackle hate speech and cyberbullying. Remember, I've talked about the World Bank and toolkits. This is part of their vernacular. You can pick it up here. You can pick up who is talking just by the words they use, as I've been saying. Watch the language. Very, very, very interesting and very crucial to be able to do so. And I've been repeatedly and routinely here exposing these toolkits towards the techno-digital gulag, and I'm not sure how available they still are here on the World Bank. The whole spectrum. Again, these toolkits are tailored to follow the instruction manual on how to dismantle any government, part or in parts or aspects, plausibly. And so this is already working. This has been working, this condition, to subvert the republic that we were duty-bound to keep. And until we get that power back, we don't have rights. We're in the post-founding father era. We're under Lincolnization. And I'd read plenty of documents on this. The WEF and UN move to regulate free speech online. The World Economic Forum, WEF, has announced that it is joining forces with the United Nations in a push to seize control of free speech online. Two unelected globalist organizations are moving to position themselves as online regulators of speech. The WEF and the UN's Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, have developed a digital safety toolkit, which they are pressuring sovereign nations' governments to adopt. It's very critical to hear that. The nations are the ultimate decider. So understand that. Like the problem with the WHO becoming your health organization. The United States Constitution will not allow that. We've heard, even in this post-founding father era, Constitution can be important. And I've pressed that even the United States recognizes the limitation of health authority against, contrary to it sitting in the federal government has to reside, because of the Constitution, because of the establishment of the United States, in the states. And this is the kind of thing we're talking about. These folks are thinking that they can throw this all over the place. And when you see that it requires the sovereign, if you will, to make that decision. If you are underneath the communicable disease law, you're the sovereign when you make the decision on what care and treatment. There's a selection. It's not just one. Moving into this article, UNESCO and the WEF, I'll pronounce the words instead of saying the letters, insist that their toolkit, and it's in quotes, toolkit developed to tackle hate speech and cyberbullying. However, the toolkit specifically targets online wrongthink, a.k.a. misinformation and disinformation, for censorship. And remember, as I said, the communication lines in a war are all important, and the government and the militaries know that. And I think this is just another militant arm of that sustainability crowd. As we see more, and the digital gulag, and who is running it, or can run it, the Google deal with Canada to keep news content on its platform. Big deal here. Canada outlawed all this stuff. They had to pay the news sources and all this, and some of the companies said no way. I think Meta said no. And Google, behind the scenes, made a deal. And so this is showing you money talks. Where the money is, they're going to move. And Google removed Don't Be Evil from their motto for a reason. Google has agreed to pay Canadian publishers for their news content, backing down from the high-stakes threat to block all news content produced in the country on its platforms after the tech giant and the Canadian government announced a deal Wednesday to avert the looming crisis. How important this is, folks. Seriously, how important this is. The agreement resolves tensions between Google and Kanukistan over a controversial law known as C-18 requiring digital platforms to compensate news publishers for their work. And it is the latest twist in the global debate over the role digital platforms play in facilitating or stifling news publishers, particularly small independent outlets. Under the announced deal with Google, the details of which remain murky because the law's final regulations have yet to be formally published, the search giant will pay $100 million Canadian a year into a fund that will be distributed to publishers. Asked whether the Google agreement may change Meta's stance on news in Canada, company spokesman Andy Stone told CNN, "Unlike search engines, we do not proactively pull news from internet to place in our users' feeds, and we have long been clear that the only way we can reasonably comply with the Online News Act is by ending news availability for people in Kanukistan." After Meta removed news content from its platforms in Kanukistan, some smaller news publishers that depend on Meta for distribution reported difficulties reaching readers. The impact of the deal on other similar legislative proposals worldwide is uncertain, but how the agreement with Google plays out could potentially shape the course of those policies. We don't understand how few organizations, corporations or people too, it is to change a global perspective. You're watching it happen now. This internet was an interesting weapon, and they're doing a good job using it against us. So my next thing on looking at all these censorship and things, what does Elon Musk have against colectomies? X announces new policy, phrases such as decolonization from the river to the sea could result in X ban. Remember the power of the speech and the censorship, and a few people making these decisions for us and being able to make it stick in a system of communication that we actually would need if this thing goes live. And so what if we're looking at this, what if I've suffered decolonization, and choose the motto from the river to the sea, I poo free? What if I put that on X? Joke aside, Elon Musk has announced a new change in policy to X. On Friday, his announcement established that the use of the terms decolonization and from the river to the sea phrases commonly thrown around by pro-Palestinian movement would invite suspension on the platform as they imply genocide. The change came after pressure from major corporate advertisers. It only implies genocide, folks? Is that all? Censorship by implication now? That's Elon's town square? See, these words mean a whole lot more than mere arbitrary and capricious genocide. And they're also not applicable to a political movement referred to by His Majesty, the UK. Remember, we're talking about here. And this is the misapplication of words. This is where the decider has it wrong. As I've said, whenever I talked about the Covey swindle, I was dealing in law. These people don't recognize law. And so an emailer, a listener, someone who distributed my content is gone. All for medical misinformation. And none of it can be determined that relative to communicable disease law. And so these platforms are unlawfully removing content, information that people need to hear. And we've seen the ramification, the consequence of not getting that information and getting it spread around. But reading here, or looking through here, not referring to His Majesty as causing this has really got a problem for me. But what if here, because of decolonization, no longer had a poo for brains and actually knows that as a matter of international law and agreement, from the river to the sea means so much more, such as what of lawless Zionist Federation a la His Majesty UK being the lawless belligerent occupier in power over the entity? What of that? And this certainly then is contrary to his opinion, openly rabid representative prostituting themselves. All this they're allowing, all these things they promote, genocide. Interesting, implies, and he denounced, he doesn't go after the actual actions, must myopic self-serving imposition of implying genocide. The phrase better means to restore the international law the Zionists are violating and restoring the Palestinians' self-determination over the entirety of the of Palestine, the land, as agreed. Why, what about that, Mr. Musk, I would ask? What of this phrase? It is only implying, and you're missing the real point. And remember, this came after he had visited on Israel, the Zionist request, to go see the crib with the blood stains. Could have been totally set up, probably was. They're the ones that caused that. The self-determination from the river to the sea is all about that, and it's not even that, because it's bigger. It's much bigger. Palestine was much more. And Musk totally blows that out. And so this is the censorship sitting inside the town square. And there's no distinguishment and protection of the civilian acts that are going on there, as opposed to the military regarding belligerent occupation, or as anti-Semitic as they are. There's no recognition in Musk about that as well, on his little ban. His singular self-determined ban has no basis. And this whole condition, this belligerent occupation, their obligations, that the Zionist Federation is the anti-Semite when they attack the Palestinian, when they don't recognize the civilian capacity and it's to be protected, they don't recognize that Hamas has two capacities and it has to be known at the moment they are their intention, whether it's governmental or whether it's military, and if it's non military, they are a civilian at that point. In fact, they're the government that's not supposed to be touched. All these things, all these issues are not debatable. To say what he does it mean that he's not aware of these important and viable things as well? The international norms, he's totally irrelevant to them? You hear the last few stories, these social digital gulag areas, containment, cognitive warfare, are global in their scope. This is not, you don't need to go too far. It's not local in what is trying to be going on here. And I'm hoping better that Elon Musk would answer honestly and say, I don't have a clue about what you're talking about. Because the alternative would be pretty, not very pretty in the least. Implying genocide would be the least of his concerns, where there's a buck on influence to make if he wants to profess there's like a justice in the world. And I would hope he would not want to find himself on the wrong side of that, notwithstanding what he wants to say and purport so intelligently he wants to claim, I suppose. So what can Musk have against the decolonization of Zionists that instituted contrary to international law? Why doesn't he speak about that? We see then that people can't speak freely in the town square to elucidate and rid the world of those that would cause genocide under this false euphemism, this false definition, this false imposition. It's kind of sickening in a way, and it's a conduit of sickness, I suppose. And speaking of global sewers, Paris mayor quits global sewer X. Anne Hidalgo stated that the platform and its owner act deliberately and as exacerbate tensions and conflicts. In a lengthy statement posted on X, the socialist mayor told her 1.5 million followers that she held Elon Musk responsible for the changes he'd made since he took over the company in October of the last year, albeit without naming him directly. She continued by saying, "The controversy, rumor, and crude manipulation are ruling a public debate fueled by Twitter algorithm, where their only thing that counts is the number of likes," adding that facts are irrelevant. I guess I just named a whole lot that he has not considered relative to this thing going on, this genocide, literally, in Gaza by a belligerent occupier, having no ability, no right in law, no how, and likely because they have no moral capacity at all in them. And if we look historically on the book that they claim allows them to be there, they're in violation of that. They are the violators. They are known. They're the chosen, but not the way they claim in life here on the land. Labeling the platform the clear political project, Hidalgo accused its owner of acting deliberately to exacerbate tensions and conflict, saying it had become the vast global sewer. On November 15th, the social media mogul agreed with a post on X that said the Jewish people hold a dialectical hatred of white people, sparking a new round of criticism that he promotes anti-Semitic views. The billionaire responded to a user's post with, "You have said the actual truth." On Monday, in an apparent bid to repair the damage, Elon Musk toured the site of October 7th Hamas assault, really a resistance under international law, on Israel, and it's actually in Israel, it's on Palestine, and declared his commitment to do whatever was necessary to stop the spread of hatred. Early on Monday, Musk posted on X, "Actions speak louder than words." In fact, that's all you need to pay attention to, as Libra Code says, so maybe that's pretty close. But that was an interesting neutral statement that's necessary to stop the spread of hatred. He didn't place it, though he's sitting in Zionist territory, occupied territory. He's not really speaking on whom. It would seem that he's implying Hamas, but I took that as a neutral statement. But indeed, X knows when you seize him here, as we see Libra Code, you knows him when you seize him. Elon's saying that very same thing on this point, and you see him flip-flop as well on this pressure. Again, he's just a pandering, whatever, I don't know, the richest man in the world, the pandering. I guess that's how you get there. But that's what I've said and identified through the Libra Code. You knows him when you sees him. The actions speak louder than words. And dialectic hatred and the unfound ironic anti-Semitic trope aside, why support or take action without doing any due diligence regarding Palestine to support a belligerent occupier instead, a known and routine international violator of humanitarian law? I don't know how Elon Musk can even say what he's done and hold to that without violating all this stuff himself. And I look at that and I say, when I'm trying to identify all these truths and put them forward, and you look at what's going on with my account on X, behind the woodshed cannot get any traction relative to this social sewer. You see no followers, no responding, no interaction, no nothing on X. I've been around for over a decade on that thing, and there's just a build it and they would come. No, that's not going to happen. But not having any traction on this social sewer, maybe that's a good thing, don't you think? Possibly. Israel pursuing similar goals to Russia, says Lavrov. I've got to just say quickly, just before I read some more, this one's got me shocked. I'm hoping I got a document here that may prove it out better, but the fight against Nazism is what historically unites Russia and the Middle Eastern country, the foreign minister said. He's talking of Israel. Therefore, we need to be very careful about our common history and with Israel, and above all, the history of the fight against Nazism. This is the main thing that unites us historically, Lavrov said. The only historic ties to the Zionist Federation that I've said previously would be Russia's wrongful international recognition of a state of Israel invading Palestine, and also pushing the West two-state solution where the territory is singularly Palestine. But we go on to read here, with Putin stating and backing that up, that the only way to resolve the Mideast crisis was through a two-state formula approved by the UN Security Council. Well, that was supposed to be the self-determination of the Palestinians, isn't it? That's a violation. I'm really shocked at Lavrov here. I don't know what's really going on, but I'm going to have a potential amelioration of a next article we'll read here first. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has stated the end goal of the IDF is to complete destruction of the Hamas movement in all of its forms, as well as the elimination of the extremism in Gaza. All of its form in Hamas means that's a violation of international law of war for an occupying force that should not touch Hamas in its political capacity. Lavrov, however, noted that these goals seem similar to demilitarization and denazification, which Moscow has been pursuing in Ukraine since it launched its offensives in February 2022. And boy, oh boy, I looked at this and said, did Lavrov really mean to equate Russia to a belligerent occupier committing genocide merely in order to use the Nazi trope in an attempt to promote Russia's intention to Nazify in Ukraine, equating the Zionist action in Palestine to what Russia is doing in Ukraine in eliminating a people from their own land? Did he really mean that? Really? I'm really shocked here. I could not believe I'm seeing this in print. Russia seemingly similar is a belligerent occupying committing genocide? I don't think so. I don't see that at all. Is that what's he really saying here? Israel is also a signatory to the Convention of Prevention of Punishment of Crime of Genocide, which is first adopted in 1948 in response to the Nazi mass murder of Jews during World War II. Well, they should be subject, don't you think? But I'm having real trouble believing that that analogy came out of Lavrov's mouth. But there it is. We'll have to kind of take that for what it's worth. We'll have to wait and see if there's any other correction to that in the near future. This statement had to be a major guffaw from an otherwise guffawless foreign minister at all here. He's a pretty good guy as far as what he's doing. I can tell his statesmanship and diplomacy. He's pretty careful about what he does. But I'm a bit stunned at this statement. And this president seems like a propaganda gambit. I don't know that he's going to get it that way. I don't think he looks good for that. And I wonder, again, as I think about this stuff, I wonder, how do you come to this change? Is this the first signs of jab harm in Lavrov? And before I go too deep on that part, there is a story and a response that came off that someone that's an American who's a communist and living in Donetsk area did write. His name is Russell Texas Bentley. He's fought over there for the Donetskians, and he writes that something got lost in translation in this. Of course, what most people who are up in arms with condemning Minister Lavrov don't know is what he actually said and the meaning that they can be inferred from his words. It is a far cry from the less than ideal headline written by RT. I have to say, though, it's not just the headline when you read that through. Lavrov's words, he says, were taken out of context and their meanings intentionally twisted. Okay, fair enough, but it is an RT.com originated article that they printed. This is Russia Today, that those of us who can't speak Russian rely on to anticipate the Russian leaning even. We can filter through that, but these words were really startling somehow. The specific words he goes on to write here, we can read the specific words at the heart of the controversy can be found in Lavrov's answer to the question about the Gaza close to the end of the interview. Unfortunately, these words are somewhat ambiguous, syllable, they can be misconstrued to mean that what the IDF is doing in Gaza and now also in the West Bank is comparable to what Russia has done in Ukraine. Nothing, he says, nothing could be further from the truth, both in reality and in the intent of Lavrov's words. This is an American who speaks Russian, who lives there, lives in Donetsk, and is fought for them. And he's telling us what his views are. So just put that in context, too. No, he's a military guy from America, American soldier there, too, as well. No honest or serious person could in any way compare Israel's genocidal attacks on Gaza, in which more than 70% of the homes have been destroyed, over 56,000 people have been wounded, almost 21,000 people have been killed, the vast majority civilians, and the majority of those civilians, women, and children, with the limited military operation in Russia in Ukraine, where Russia has tried every diplomatic approach to avoid or reduce the violence and taken great pains to avoid the destruction of the civilians and non-military infrastructure, even in the face of a constant escalation of the provocations of Kiev regime and their Western masters. It is simply not credible in any degree to infer that the comparison was what Lavrov intended. So, the problem for me on that part is, anyone who reads, an honest person who reads the historic record and the fact that Russia recognized a belligerent occupier in the land of another, that Lavrov's words through that filter take on more than the meaning of RT.com's representation. So, it doesn't really hold there. And I'm not really condemning this, I'm just showing that there's another continuing thought about this. There's more answers that have to come from this explanation by Russell Bentley a bit, I think, for me anyway. And it doesn't help that Russia is promoting here the sustainability known to be destructive, by which I think maybe Russell may not know about, as many don't. And this is not a judgment. This is just a way that we got to work this out, because what he said, what Lavrov said, was really startling to me anyway. But that said, all that said, Russell Bentley is a devout communist, and likely wouldn't see any problem with sustainability. Again, not a judgment. It's a perception. It's what you believe in is what you live for. This guy's pretty straight up from what I can tell. He's a straight shooter from what I can tell. So I agree. I hope, I'm glad to see what he's saying here. That all said, the tact and presentation is so over the top. It really does need a more diligent scrutiny. You get this article and get the link. And if I can find a time myself, I'm going to be interested to see a better translation if I can. If one's available for me that I can trust myself, using the links here, there's articles and the links, this article to provide the statements that he's talking about. But this is a real shocker from Lavrov in Russia. I can see what Bentley is talking about. I can see that there could be these mistakes. My problem is, you know them when you see them. And Russia's not so clean on what it's done in history relative to Palestine, or what it's doing in the BRICS and the future they want. And I know Russell Bentley and his discussions, they're all cheerleading multipolarity. And I've told you the financial, the economic trap, all that is relative to the existing global banking system. As we read here, Israel sued for genocide in The Hague. And I mentioned this earlier in the broadcast. South Africa has asked that the International Court of Justice intervene in the Gaza conflict. We can only wait to see how that goes. I do hear that Israel is going to answer as a matter of procedure that joins them to the case. They can't deny the power of the ICJ. I hope the ICJ is a whole lot less the puppet of the Western master, as we've heard. And we get to see we're just going to witness what the Western master controlled justice system will do in the face of a complaint of genocide. And I'm looking forward just to see the dynamic of it. I hope something I said today explains more of the world, how you look at it, the tools that we have to use, the notice that they tell us is news, how to peer through it, how to categorize it, how to think in multiple tracks so that you can become better aware of what's coming at you. And maybe you can just step out the way and not let the most dire stuff run you down, because it doesn't have to. If you see it coming, you're not facing the wrong way. I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature willing.
Another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
Feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.